lecture tonight is appreciating the tapes of Srila Prabhupada. No matter what the subject is, we only manage to touch on some of Prabhupada's deep, wonderful qualities, and we don't exhaust them talking. So we'll continue in that spirit. Not that we feel we've said everything there is to say about Prabhupada's books in 1 hour, but we want to cover many different things. So tonight we'll talk about hearing Prabhupada, which we do now by this gift of technology, the retrieval system of hearing, by tapes. In the scriptures, the hearing is very important. Shravana is the first item in spiritual life. Prabhupada has written in one purport that there are different ways you can perceive milk. By your taste, you know it's sweet. By the touch, you know it's cold. By the sight, you know it's white. But by proper hearing, you can act. You can't with only one of the senses. Hearing, not we hear knowledge, can provided we hear it in the right place and we hear it intelligent, you can get a total understanding. Another example is that a little injection anywhere in the body will spread throughout the body, say some poison or something. So in the ear, only in the one place, you can get a total enlightenment. I'll give you a sample. In the Bhagavatam purport. As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established in his heart. The sage is recognized not by sight, but by hearing. One should approach a sadhu or a great sage not to see, but to hear him. If one is not prepared to hear the words of a sadhu, there is no profit. The acharya or the Goswami must be well acquainted with all these literatures. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called shravana. The main purpose of sannyas life is to be in constant companionship with the Supreme Lord who is in the heart, or hearing of him through oral reception. In this age, hearing is more important than thinking, because one's thinking may be disturbed by mental agitation. That's like silent meditation. But if one concentrates on hearing, he will be forced to associate with the sound vibration of Krishna. We can sometimes use the word hearing to mean reading or you know, other kinds of reception. But when Prabhupada uses these phrases like submissive oral reception, ability to hear, sound vibration, receiving the message through the ear, then these all indicate physical hearing. We also say sometimes that someone says, what if someone is deaf? So you can also receive the knowledge by reading or learning as a deaf person does. But although we can broaden the meaning, we can't really escape the emphasis on this specific sound vibration in the ear. In another place, Prabhupada says, simply by giving oral reception to the... Of course, oral here is A-U-R-A-L. To the Vedic literatures, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna sprouts up. Purport. There are various senses of which the ear is the most effective. This sense works even when the man is deep asleep. One can protect himself from the hands of an enemy while awake, but while asleep, one is protected by the ear only. The importance of hearing is mentioned here in connection with the attainment of the highest perfection in life. Prabhupada even used to say sometimes that even when we heard the Sanskrit and couldn't understand, that was very beneficial. So with faith, we would sometimes hear such a Sanskrit recitation. One time he did that particular... Oh, I remember what I was... Prabhupada himself said about his spiritual master that he would hear him in the beginning and he couldn't understand, but he went on hearing. So he was appreciating his Guru Maharaj, although he couldn't really understand it all. One time Prabhupada was reading to the devotees and they was having them read the Krishna book. And then he read a whole section in Sanskrit and specifically said that by hearing the vibration you can become purified. It is especially mentioned here that one should be inquisitive to hear with open ears from the authorized source of the bona fide spiritual master. How is one to receive? One should receive the transcendental message by oral reception. The word karna, run dry, means through the holes of the ears. The favor of the spiritual master is not received through any other part of the body, but the ears. So, when Prabhupada came to America, although he had no money, he soon got a tape recorder was given to him. And after one was stolen, he got another one. He took it very seriously that he started to record his messages. So this indicates that these tapes that we have now organized into a tape ministry. It began with Prabhupada himself. When there was no assistant to turn on the machine or make everything nice. Even if there was one person or alone, he would use a tape recorder. He wrote back to India about this to his godbrother Tirtha Maharaj, 66. I may cite here one incident which happened yesterday evening. I have prepared some tape record of my personal kirtan. When one of this tape record was played, the audience became practically charmed by that, although not a single word of my language was understandable by them. So I am confident of the statement of Srila Haridas Thakur that the transcendental sound of Lord Chaitanya's Harinam can do good, even to the birds and beasts. There are certain things that in Prabhupada's preaching that have to do with the modern age, like he's called Jet Age Parayapajakacharya. He was the first Vaishnava to travel by the jet all over the world. Previously they would walk on foot and not outside India. So the tape recording is a similar kind of thing. Even during Prabhupada's time, everything was reel-to-reel tapes, and then the cassettes, everything with the technology was moving so quickly. The early years are all reel-to-reel. But at least there was tape recording. So this is an example of yukta-vairagya. The material thing is used in the service of Krishna. In case someone thinks, sounds like a material presentation talking about the spiritual importance of tapes. Tapes are material. But no, these tapes are not material. Prabhupada explains that specifically in Nectar of Devotion. We are using many machines for the advancement of our present Krishna consciousness movement. Machines like typewriters, dictaphones, tape recorders, microphones, airplanes. Sometimes people ask, why are you utilizing material products if you condemn the advancement of material civilization? But actually, we do not condemn. We simply ask people to do whatever they're doing in Krishna consciousness. An example of that misconception is mentioned by Brahmananda, of his first memoirs that he hadn't seen Prabhupada, but a friend, a roommate or a friend had, and said, yes, there's this Swami over in 26 Second Avenue. I went, but I don't know. He had a big tape recorder, Hewer reel to reel, and how could that be spiritual? And so in this way there's cynicism not to go and see him because he had a tape recorder. But how could a guru who was really a guru have a tape recorder? But he went. Prabhupada even used the example of a tape recorder. A tape recorder is, it does a wonderful thing, the way it captures a person's voice and it's there. So he gave that as an example to explain Krishna's material energy, that this world that we see is actually Krishna in separated energy, is called. That means it's actually Krishna, but at the same time, simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different. It's not Krishna. So to explain that difficult principle, Prabhupada said, just like when I speak on the tape recording, when you hear it, it's Swamiji. But in the same sense, it's not really me. It's removed from me. For example, it can only play over and over the same thing, whereas in person he can speak spontaneously. So, tape recorder is the separate energy of Prabhupada. At the same time, he has an absolute presence, and that we're going to try to appreciate. We've already heard how important sound is, so we get the absolute darshan, or presence, in these recordings. Therefore, I want to talk a little bit about mostly Prabhupada's lecturing, which is what we mostly have on tape. And we mostly refer to the tapes, but we can talk of the phenomena of him speaking, as he used to, aside from the tapes. In other words, when he spoke, the recording was important, but it was incidental. The real thing that was his live presence and speaking, speaking and hearing was very important, just as it is now for all of us. I'd like to mention, and maybe you can think also, of some examples of special advantages of the this form of Prabhupada in contrast to the other aspects we've been mentioning. Oh, so one thing about the tape, it's a sort of a practical thing, and that is you can imbibe the taped message while engaged in other activities. Of course, if you're really intellectually engaged in something else, that's not very good. But still, there are a number of things, especially bodily functions, like what you do in the bathroom, and when you're eating, it's not really possible to read a book, and it's not even proper. But the sound vibration can go with you, and driving a car. So many occasions like that, and we can hear at that time. Some people make a superficial objection about that they can't understand Prabhupada, but really, it's, if there's any such problem with accent or noises, it's really worth overcoming, and it's really not a great difficulty. You can soon understand if you try. So we're not exaggerating this importance out of our own enthusiasm, but Prabhupada himself stressed the importance of hearing. He didn't like it when he was speaking if his disciples were in the vicinity and weren't hearing. There's one example. When he visited Boston in 68, he had a secretary, Gaurisundar, and Prabhupada would go on the morning walk. He was having particularly interesting philosophical talks on the walks because some students of Swami Satchidananda were coming every day. But his servant or secretary stayed back and did work. One day Prabhupada came back to his room and then he said, where is Gaurisundar? All the other devotees were still there from the walk. And then the secretary came to the door, and Prabhupada would, said, why didn't you come on the walk? And then he said, don't think that you have already heard this, that you're an advanced student, you don't have to hear this. You should come when I'm speaking, you should hear. So he expected it like that. I was also reprimanded in France. Prabhupada was speaking in his room. I was his secretary for a while, and I was outside, and another of his secretaries was outside. I was typing his letters, and the other devotee was working. Sometimes we thought, oh, this is a good opportunity. We can catch up on our work. Prabhupada is speaking to guests for a couple of hours. But behind that was also, and we've heard this before, what he's speaking. So he sent someone out and said, why are they out there? Tell them to come in. When we came in, he said something that you should hear when I'm speaking. So those impressions of the importance are there. Here's a Prabhupada Nectar memoir. Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees and guests to be attentive while he spoke on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. One time, when Prabhupada objected to a baby's crying, a person in the audience challenged, if you are a guru, why are you disturbed? Prabhupada replied that it was the audience that was disturbed from attentive hearing, and that was why he had asked the baby's noises be stopped. Even when Prabhupada spoke in Hindi, which most of his disciples could not understand, he expected them to stay and be quiet. He said that even if they couldn't understand the language, the sound vibration would purify them. We're going to hear anyway, so if we don't hear Krishna Kata, then we'll hear Prajalpa and some music. So it's either one or the other. Thinking of Prabhupada as a person and speaking in his life, aside from recordings, it was a very important part of his life. It gave him vital life to be able to speak. He used to say that Mona, silence, means don't talk nonsense. And so if a transcendentalist is not very advanced, better he be literally, physically silent. But if somebody can speak about Krishna, then he should speak. And that is silence because there's no material sound. Well, in Prabhupada's case, he really liked to talk about Krishna. It wasn't that he would save himself unless he had a big audience. He wouldn't speak. He would speak to his to somebody who was interested. He'd just go into his room, and he would speak about Krishna, whoever was there. It flowed from him spontaneously. It's a very significant and noticeable thing. We have the lectures, but this is something that you have to read in memoirs or have to have experienced as a sign of Prabhupada's Shakti. He would always preach and talk about Krishna. And as I say, he didn't have to have an occasion to do it, and it came very spontaneously, straight, what we call straight philosophy and scripture, and just the same things he would preach in the class, or somewhat more informally, but his anger at the demons in the material world, talk about Krishna in the spiritual world, what he's doing, and everything. So speaking was important to him. It's important to us, but it was very important to him. He didn't just tell people, well, I've written a lot of books, just read my books. The books were there, but the talking went on. And this was also meant to be exemplary, that his students should also take over. Sometimes Prabhupada used to listen to his disciples, ask them to speak. But for him, it was one of his main ways of serving Krishna. I remember when for a while, Yerobar and Vishaka were going to film Prabhupada, and they did for a little while. But filmed his days, different activities. But there was some talk, and one of the devotees said, well, Prabhupada, what he mainly does is talk anyway. He doesn't have so many outward activities that you can film. He's doing this, now he's doing that. It's mostly that he's speaking. There was one time, we get a little flavor of this. This is from Africa, where it was reported that Prabhupada was having many engagements and going from one to another. And at night he said, Prabhupada, after finishing one late night preaching marathon, asked for food and remarked, you see, I'm hungry. Keep me talking. That is my life. Don't let me stop talking. Another special thing about the tapes is you can hear his conviction in his voice, which is different than the written word, which has its own conviction. But it's so many things that we can't even analyze them all, but how he conveys different emotions of Krishna consciousness through the speech. Now, I thought it might be interesting to tell you a little bit about the Bhaktivedanta tape ministry. In part, my lecture is a plug for the tape ministry. We hope people will get tapes and practice hearing the tapes. So there are devotees who have dedicated themselves to organizing the tape ministry. Here's a little rundown on it. The original tapes, now 20 years old, are in a precarious condition, but the Bhaktivedanta Archives is converting all of them to a more technologically advanced tape recording system. The Archives estimates that this will take 5 years and says that donations are needed. Its own fundraising consists of printing and selling the printings of conversations, those conversations books, whatever money they make. I can't explain it in the technology, but they showed me the old tapes, reel-to-reel, and old cracky tapes. They're now being transferred to these really super tapes that will last a long time. And if they didn't do that, it's not like, oh boy, now they've got better tapes. Well, what was wrong with the other tapes? But the other tapes were just were on the verge of being finished, gone into oblivion. Well, these new tapes save the old ones, and now they'll be able to last much longer. Tape ministry was expanded in 1978 to its present size, 711 tapes of lectures and conversations and 35 tapes of bhajans. Many of the poorer quality tapes were never released but are now being published in the conversations books. And then there, within that 711, there are different series. There are five different series: Krishna book, 33 tapes, nectar devotion lectures, Lord Kapila tapes, Queen Kunti yoga system. The different lecture series are significant. If a devotee is living in one place, he should try to get a complete collection of tapes and hear them in sequence. Tapes are chronologically categorized as well as labeled according to the verse being spoken about. Any devotee can thus follow Prabhupada's preaching adventures as they unfolded. And there's some interesting statistics about verses that he lectured on most frequently. I bet you can't guess what Bhagavad Gita he lectured on much more than any other verse. It's, anyone guess?
For the actual class?
Yeah, well, there's one verse in Bhagavad Gita that he lectured on 27 times. And next to that is only, the next one is 10 times.
4-9? That's what I was saying.
4-9? No, that's not even on the list of the top 7. Yeah, it's a real surprise. 7-1. Maya Shakta Manaparta. Yes, lecture, huh? 27 times. The next one, you would guess, probably, 213. Dehi nos minyata dehi komaram yodam. As this body changes from you. The 7-1 is hear from me, now hear from me. So that was 213 was 10 times. And then 7-3 was lectured on 7 times. Manusinam sahasreshu, out of thousands of men, hardly one knows Krishna in truth. Then 2-11, 2-12, 4-11, 13-1. And Bhagavatam verses, the verse he lectured on the most, 15 times, was 7-6-1, Komaram Acharat Pragya, Prahlad Maharaj verse. One should study Srimad Bhagavatam starting with 5 years old. And then the next one was one that I knew he lectured on a lot, 13 times. 1-2-6, Savai Pumsa Paro Dharmo. What is real religion? Paro Dharmo. That which is practiced without interruption or without any motive. And then, the same number of times, 13. 5-5-1, Nayam Deho Deha Bhajan Raloke. The first verse of the teachings of Lord Rishabhadev to his sons. You've heard that, and then he would often set the background. He said, Rishabhadev, he had 100 sons, and he taught them this is real knowledge. If you practice austerity in the human form of life, don't live like the stool-eating hog. That's a very frequent lecture that he chose, and other lectures. So these are interesting statistics. One thing I really like is little things that happen on the tapes. They're like the live lectures and little asides and things, and sometimes you don't notice them, you notice them, and you just can savor them. I was listening to one tape, 1966, right in that 22nd Avenue wild setting, and Prabhupada's lecturing, and all of a sudden he's silent, and he says, there is a bug. And then there's another silence, a little noise, and then he starts speaking again. And I just pictured this big roach coming out, because there were a lot of them. It's the 22nd Avenue. And there's Prabhupada so solemnly, gravely, transcendentally speaking, and even now you're listening, and all of a sudden he says, there is a bug. So there are numbers of things like that in the lectures that they make it very interesting. Even in the background sounds like Prabhupada talking in Tehran, Iran, and you hear the people, the Muslims, priests, they're chanting, and other sounds in the street, and of course Prabhupada comments on them. A lot of wonderful things like that. Just the fact that we have so many talks and live questions and answers, you don't have such things for Jesus Christ and Lord Buddha or Lord Chaitanya even. We don't imagine having that. We're grateful for whatever we have. But to have live questions and answers of a great devotee, that's Krishna's mercy that Prabhupada came at this time. We can hear his laughing, his anger, his ecstasy. Those the different times where he goes, a few times at least, when Prabhupada goes into trance, there's a long silence, and then he comes out again. All these different things. Because it's like that. Like in music, often you hear musicians say that the silence is just as important as the music. the pauses in between. So there's a lot, even the pauses and silences, a lot of things you can appreciate. As far as Prabhupada's actual lectures are concerned, they're very well known, but just not to teach you as much as just to appreciate together, I can mention some features. They're all about 30 to 45 minutes long. And one reason we can mention them is they're a good standard now that we all speak. We can try to follow this. Sometimes devotees, they speak 2 hours, 3 hours. But although Prabhupada spoke all the time, he never spoke like that because he knew we couldn't, or for whatever reason. To give an actual lecture in the temple, 30, 45 minutes. And that's why all these tapes are uniform. They usually end on one side because that's when he ended. They're always structured around commentaries on verses, and that would determine the subject matter. He'd read the verse, and then he'd speak. He didn't so much speak on subject matters otherwise, but whatever was on the verse. Prabhupada would go on a lot of tangents, and he'd start to say something, and then it would remind him of something else, and something else, and something else. He'd go out, but then he'd always come back. And if you listen, there's a very sound craft and symmetry, and it's going somewhere, and it always ends. Everything gets tied up in the end, all the different points. And I remember there was one lecture Prabhupada gave, and I was very impressed, in Hyderabad. And then after at night, I said, your lecture was so wonderful, there was so much symmetry to it. He said, well, there was? And then he said, oh, it's not me, it's Krishna who's speaking. He quoted verses, so many verses. That's why those devotees who are carrying on that tradition are exemplary. Just like yesterday, Nagaraj Prabhu was here. Just like Prabhupada, I quote one verse after another from memory. And that also, we don't have statistics, but there were verses that he lectured on more than others many times. But that's a very prominent feature of his lecture. Made everything solid, one verse after another. And Prabhupada advocated, it wasn't like an academic talk on the subject matter, but it was that you should do this, you should surrender to Krishna, you should preach, you should control your senses, you should chant Hare Krishna, become a devotee. He would... He was a real preacher, because he knew that people would only be happy and satisfied if they took to Krishna consciousness. So he personally advocated, and the lectures ended strongly like that. Just for fun, instead of just talking about, I thought we could play a tape for a few minutes. And maybe anyone would like to point out some features that come to mind about his lecturing on this particular tape or whatever. I was here for about 3 minutes or so.
So, one cannot fix up his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna unless Mahiya Sangha Pado Rajubi Sekam Niskin Chananang Navanita Java. This is not possible so long. He has not the opportunity of touching the dust of the lotus feet of a personality who is Niskincha, who has no material hankerings. Mahiyasa, and life is dedicated only for Krishna. As soon as one comes in touch with such personality, by His grace, these things, this Krishna consciousness can be achieved. Not by any other. Naishang matistava durukramangri. The test will be that Pishatta anattho padamo jadathya mahi asanga padurajubisikam nishtinchanang lavanita java. This is the test and this is the way to approach a bona fide person and receive this Krishna consciousness from Him by His mercy, by His grace. But as soon as one receives, immediately His liberation from material entanglement begins, immediately. And then, as He makes further progress, His life becomes sublime. Now one thing, one may question, suppose one has taken up to Krishna consciousness out of sentiment, but he could not finish it. What is the reason? That is also said in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tattva sadharmam charanambujam hari. Sadharma. Sadharma means everyone has got some specific duty, occupation. Everyone. So, if somebody gives up his specific duty in which he is engaged, tattvasa dharma, just like many boys and girls, they come here, they were engaged in something else, but all of a sudden they give up and they join this Krishna consciousness movement. So, for them, Bhagavad says, tattva sadhana.
Anyone like to make any comment about a feature of Prabhupada's lecture that maybe came to mind by hearing? Yes.
There's one verse Prabhupada speaks about that Prahlad Maharaj is also quoting that one who hasn't taken dust from the lotus feet of devotee, he cannot awaken his Krishna consciousness.
That's what he said here, yeah.
I thought there was a different verse too.
A different verse?
That was what I was thinking.
I don't understand what you're saying. He said, you're thinking of another verse.
Yes, it says something like a Padarajo Vishekam verse. I don't remember the verse.
There are a number of similar verses. There's one devotee, Rohini Nandan. He has some, of course, we know him for teaching how to memorize shlokas. And he also teaches some classes where he plays Prabhupada's tapes and then they analyze it. I asked him to explain it to me. Let me see, he sent me a note. They recite the verse and synonyms, his class does. Then they play the lecture tape. They make notes on the theme, main points, sub-points, analogies used, verses quoted, and personally relevant topics. Then they discuss it. So they'll all like get ready to hear the tape and know what Prabhupada is going to speak on. Then they take notes, and then the devotees talk among themselves after his lecture. I used to do a version of that. We would play for a few minutes and then stop. and then we talk about it and play for a few more minutes. In different ways you could work with a group hearing tapes. Since we're talking about tapes, not only lectures, we should mention the bhajans. They especially, you should, can't just talk about them, you have to hear them to enjoy them. I have one I really like, I'll play for a few minutes. But now, anyone who likes bhajans, there's a huge collection of many young and talented singers. But we shouldn't neglect Prabhupada's bhajans also. He very much enjoyed singing them. Again, we don't have to know the language. Prabhupada said it's like thunder. When the lightning and thunder comes, it cracks the heart. Let this play, and I'll ask you for some questions every night. Those who haven't been to this class, they know I give out papers, and because I'm preparing to give these lectures in the Vrindavan course, and as important as the lecturing part is a part where I'm able to ask questions to the group based on the lecture. And then we all discuss it. I answer it, or somebody else in the class answers. So, if you can do that again tonight, about Prabhupada's tapes. And just to help prompt you, if you can't think of a specific question, you can write down in the form of how you'd like to see this class given, how you think the class could be improved, what you'd like to see emphasized in the class. That can also be used as like for group discussion. Something you think hasn't been brought out, or you'd like to hear brought out more. Can be a form of a doubt, challenge. Anyone finished, you can hand it in. Keep writing, but we'll talk a little. One question was, does Prabhupada listen to his own tapes? And here's a memoir. Vidyananda Goswami was Prabhupada's secretary in Mayapur, was pleased to see how Prabhupada liked his own singing for bhajans in the tape recorder. Even while working, Prabhupada played a tape, and when the recording stopped, he asked that the other side be played again. One day, in a jolly mood, while listening to his own singing of Haraye Nama Krishna, which had full harmonium, drum, and kartel accompaniment and a strong rhythm, Prabhupada began to speak, "Just go everywhere and play this tape and dance." Mm-hmm. He motioned with his hands to show how the devotees should dance. "Go all around the world performing like this, and people will be so much attracted that you will make $1,000,000. So... yeah, he liked to hear his own tapes. A number of questions revolve around what are our actual obligations to hearing tapes, and what about in relation to reading the books? Is it necessary to have an equal balance between hearing Prabhupada's tapes and reading his books on one's own time? Or is hearing tapes sufficient for the most part? Of course, it depends on the individual. I wouldn't want to tell somebody, "Oh no, you can't get by just by hearing tapes. You've got to read Prabhupada's books." It may be a person who just can't do it. But in his car, he listens 2 hours a day, real nicely, to Prabhupada's tapes. Well, that'll be his Krishna consciousness. But if you really were asking the question, not to get support for what you already are doing or like to do, it would hardly seem that you should leave out the books and just hear the tapes. So they each have their place. They're different. We talked about the books, how they're composed, the verses and the previous acharyas, commentaries. There's a special thing there. Although a few of his books are made from lectures, there's not that much difference. But... I would say we should try to have both. But you could If you could only hear, then that would be enough. Similar question. Is hearing Prabhupada's lecture tapes as important as reading his books? I mentioned that we should hear all the tapes, and there's a question, well, they're very expensive, and whatever you can hear. Srila Prabhupada said that if one does not understand the language, Hindi or Sanskrit, he will get benefited spiritually by hearing. Does this apply to any language? Any language spoken transcendentally if we can't understand it? If someone is speaking Krishna consciousness in Spanish and we don't understand Spanish, is there benefit like that? Not the same. There's a special benefit in Sanskrit, in Vyasadeva's words. That's what he said.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
This is one thing I noticed in the excerpt you play, this Prabhupada's intonation in chanting Sanskrit is so potent, and this is not the case for every devotee, for instance. And sometimes it may be more distracting, and devotees don't even know what the words they are quoting. It's obvious Prabhupada knows exactly what each word means, but it seems like either a show sometimes, or just a mechanic thing to fill in or make it more prestigious. What is the value of this?
Well, like anything done out of prestige or mechanically, it's the minimum benefit. But I don't think the answer is therefore that we shouldn't recite any verses. The best would be to actually know, but memorize verses. If you're going to speak something that you've memorized, you should memorize it and know what it means. And then after you memorize it, you can stop and explain the different words. Yes, we've experienced that, done it ourselves, or experienced someone just rattling off another shlok to show that he knows it or something.
Can he abuse that?
Yeah, I don't think the answer is to stop. I consider it real opulence, devotees who can give us shlokas and explain them. And if they do it conscientiously and seriously, just like yesterday, the devotee who gave the class yesterday is a good example. Nagaraj, that's one of his main pleasures and one of his real great contribution he makes, that he loves the language and loves how it expresses the spiritual truth in a way that the English really stops short of, if you really can do it. I like the idea of different ways to appreciate and study his tapes, particularly in groups, as you mentioned, tonight's class. Recite a verse, discuss the main points and subpoints, etc. It's encouraging to know there are variegated ways to hear without being subject to being criticized for concocting. Someone asked a question, similar subject, are there any suggestions for individual study of the tapes so that we can be sure we're not missing some points? I don't know. For myself, I study more the books. I take notes. But with the tapes, because I mostly do it at these times when I'm doing something else, I can listen very concentratedly, but I don't do any separate study. But you could do a similar study to anything, like with a book, you could take notes and etc. Oh, I know, I wanted to ask you, has anyone experienced how Prabhupada can suddenly speak to you of your particular problems and concerns? Sometimes you can really hear, yeah.
One example, the Prabhupada's Japa tape, where he suddenly says, sit properly. And even if it's not a question of sitting, it's like suddenly wakes you up that, oh, I'm spacing out my chanting, and we hear that one.
Yeah.
Of course, we hear it all the time. We may not be sitting properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
all the time. Wake up, you mean, it says in general.
Maybe it's like
yeah.
Wake up.
Does anyone have any occasion like that when they were thinking, oh, what am I going to do? And they turned on the tape and Prabhupada said, practically said your name and then said, you nonsense, this is what you should do. Anyway, I think we had that experience. What's an example of, we're saying that his lectures are standard, he's, etc. What is an example of imitating him in the wrong sense in his lecturing? I have 2 points. One would be to imitate his Indian English. That we shouldn't imitate that. What he does... We shouldn't do in that regard. But a lot of devotees do that out of affection and impression, but it doesn't sound very good to audiences, other than ISKCON audiences, to hear an American or an Englishman, or for that matter, a Frenchman, speaking his language as if it's his second language. Now, with an emphasis on imitating, I'd also say imitating his chopping technique. We should follow it and preach boldly, but if you don't have a heart like Prabhupada and realization as deep as his to criticize everybody and criticize everything, it can really come off bad. So we have to adapt it to. What we can actually say that seems right for us. Of course, I say that with caution because we should say what he says, but it's something that can be abused.
Didn't Prabhupada make a statement with that effect?
Yeah.
There are certain things I can say.
Right.
I'm an old man.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, right. A tendency maybe there to just disrespect Prabhupada by neglecting to hear carefully, by conversing while the tape is playing, by taking it for granted that Prabhupada is always talking whenever I want. That's good. Should there be a certain format or attitude for hearing Prabhupada's tapes? Yeah, familiarity breeds contempt. We were saying how these great masters of the past, centuries, we can't hear them. If somebody all of a sudden said, you know, I have a tape of Lord Buddha preaching. Now we're going to play it. Anyone who's interested would listen like anything. But, oh, we have Prabhupada. Prabhupada speaking, Prabhupada. We have Prabhupada all over the place. But it's just as valuable as that. So familiarity breeds contempt. Well, like with the books... We're mentioning how there's a Vaishnava tradition. Before they speak from a book, they worship it and then make different offerings, and then you speak from the book. Worship. So that attitude at least should be there. And maybe a little pause that now I'm going to hear Prabhupada. And please let me hear nicely and realize that I'm going to be in his presence by hearing. Some kind of mental gathering. should be there. Just by hearing you point out these things, we know we're guilty of it, and at least these practices we shouldn't do. One should practice certain things. Like I try to practice with taking care of the books. I never put something on top of one of Prabhupada's books. I don't use Prabhupada's book for a prop or something. I don't write on top of Prabhupada's books as a desk. I try to treat them as objects of worship and respect. So over the years, you just start doing that, and you avoid the offense. So you should also practice that if there's a tape playing and you start talking, then turn off the tape. You can do things like that so that it doesn't happen. And someone says, why are you doing that? You said, well, we're not really listening to this tape, so it's not respectful. Let's turn it off. Things like that. I don't know about a certain format or attitude.
This is a very famous preacher in India who is also known for his policy that he will not allow anyone to take his lectures. Of course, he's making a point which I think is valid, and the effect of it is that people just throng to hear him speak, literally 50,000 people at a time. And if their attitude is that of hearing very carefully every word he speaks, because at times he has walked out of the place.